Hi, and welcome back to the Director's Notes podcast. I'm Marbel, Editor-in-Chief, and as happens each October, Team DN headed out to the nation's capital for the 62nd edition of the London Film Festival. Those of you who follow our articles up on directorsnotes.com will have already seen that during the festival we featured interviews with filmmakers Rob Savage, Charlotte Regan and Lorenzo Wandrill for their short films Salt, Dodgy Dave and Coyote, which screened during the festival, as well as sharing our picks of the 10 LFF features which took our collective breath away. We'll also be sharing our favourite 10 short films, and longtime DN friend Alex Barrett, director of City Snapshot feature London Symphony, will once again be sharing his overview of the festival as a whole in his wrap-up piece, so head to the site to catch those. Here on the podcast, now that we've emerged from the onslaught of back-to-back daily screenings, yes, I know, what a hard life we have, we'll be sharing the interviews we recorded during the festival for feature films Utoya July 22nd, Amin, Holiday, Nancy, and The Kindergarten Teacher, so be sure to subscribe to catch all of those. Today, however, on the podcast, we're bringing you the audio from the female filmmaker panel hosted by the festival and chaired by the Pool founder Sam Baker. Comprising of filmmakers Arantxa Echeverra, director of Carmen and Lola, Sarah Bleacher, director of Mayfair, Diane Winkler, director of United Skates, Sodade Kanda, director of The Day I Lost My Shadow, and Jessica Hines, director of The Fight. This inspiring panel spoke candidly about their experiences as women filmmakers from both narrative and documentary disciplines, and as well as discussing the various impediments they've had to surmount due to their gender to get their films made. They also spoke about strategies which everyone in the film industry can employ to help level the playing field for all.
Now, if anyone ever wants to generalise about the kind of genres women are trying to do, you should just laugh here, because this is an amazing spread. We've got so much to talk to, you know, I think we can speak to so much about women in film, but if you can start off just talking a little bit about what inspired you to make your films, just for a minute or so each.
I'll talk first about my movie.
Yeah, and then we can get on to the nitty-gritty of women in film.
Then, actually, there is a movie about Syria, set in Syria, but with neo-realism and magic realism approach. I wanted to write the story of a woman during the war, but a simple story for my searcher for gas, and during her search, she discovered people lose their shadow during the war. So I felt, actually, that with the image of shadow, you can express what it means actually as a human being to be doing the war. So.
I've always been drawn to films that make some kind of social or political change in their messaging, but that are driven by a good story first. And so I straddle the world of narrative and documentary, and in the case of this film, when I found out that roller rinks in the U.S. are still completely segregated, they still have white night and black night in just about every rink I ever visited across the entire U.S., why that was, and the fact that on the black nights there was heavy police presence and just a lot of stereotypes, ways that they were trying to keep them out, and of course on the family-friendly white night there were no cops anywhere to be found. So it's kind of a film where we dive into this very vibrant, beautiful subculture that's full of music and dance and joy and celebration, which is something that you very rarely, unfortunately, see coming out of black culture. Usually in the media you see violence and you see protests and you don't see that. So we try to, on one hand, really shine a light on what it truly means to be black in the U.S. and then use that celebratory joy to spoon feed a little bit of that social message.
Thank you.
Terrific
job.
Well,
my film is about love. I'm a Spanish. But it's the love of two gypsy girls. All the actors were real gypsy people that I look for 4 years on the streets, on the markets. And they are not professional actors. And it was a really tough film to do. We were talking before, and I said, it's a miracle, it's not a movie. Yeah. But everybody said, mine too. Yes, because being a woman and being not gypsy and go to a community that is very patriarchal and the male is the one that orders everything, it was very difficult. And talk about homosexuality there, it was like, you're crazy. You will never can do this film. But we did.
Okay. Well done.
So my film is about as far away from me as it's possible to be. I am a white South African Jewish middle-aged woman, and my film is about Indian and Somali Muslim gangsters. So it literally is about as far as it's possible to be, and I wanted to see what happened when you made a film that's as far as it is to get from yourself. But at the same time, it's also a story about violence, and it's a story about a father and a son. And it's a story, in many ways, it is a story about me. You know, it's a story about becoming your parent, and not wanting to be your parent, but becoming your parent, despite that. And I think over the course of my career, I live in Joburg, and I love Johannesburg. And I think many of the films that I've made have been films about the city of Johannesburg. And there have been love stories to the city of Johannesburg, and in a way this film is too. It's a different part of Johannesburg, but it is as much a part of the city as any other part of the city.
Very good.
Well, the inspiration for the film came from this incredible old boxing gym that's in the town that I live in, Folkestone, which is it's sort of part of an old Victorian school, half of which is knocked down, and you have to go up these metal stairs. And I attended an all-women boxing evening that they had there on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And I was just so felt immediately in love with the space itself. It's this incredible red walls, it's an old Victorian building, and the light, and I just thought, this is so cinematic, this space. I wanna kind of showcase it. And then I sort of went to a few of these classes, and there's something that's about being in a boxing group with all these different women who are all kind of from completely different places, and all of us there, you know, fighting for something. You know, we were all there for a reason, different reasons, but, you know, we all wanted to punch the shit out of a punching bag, you know. And it just, I started thinking, you're making up a story and thinking, is there a way of kind of basically making a film, making this kind of boxing gym somehow the centre of a film about a woman who is struggling with something. Why is she here? And so I started to kind of make up a story about a woman who sort of lived locally, and as I sort of evolved the story, I kind of then realised that the more I was telling the story and the more I was writing it, then it was sort of started off a bit more sort of lighter, maybe more comedy, and then as I was developing it I realised that there were some themes that were naturally coming through, that were themes that were kind of dormant, I suppose, in me, that I really wanted to explore, which is about family dysfunction, about personal struggle, and about ways of overcoming that. And that's really what the film became about. And it became about a woman who was battling in the boxing ring to break that cycle of dysfunction in order to be happy in her present, in order to be happy in her family. And that's really sort of what it became about.
We were talking about how a lot of you come from a documentary background, and he said something very interesting, Deanna, that actually it's in a way slightly easier for women to make documentaries. Can you explain why you feel that is, or an easier way to break into film?
Sure. I mean, for a narrative film, you have to raise the money up front. And so as a woman, as someone who's perhaps not taken as seriously at first in the beginning of your career, raising that kind of capital is very hard to do. Where with a documentary, I could pick up a camera by myself and shoot and prove to the world that I know how to make a film. And so what my partner, she was also a woman, my filmmaking partner, the two of us shot the entire film, did all the sound, produced it, raised all the money, directed it, and it wasn't until post that we actually brought in the rest of the team. And that way we kind of had the immediate access to allow ourselves to prove that we can make a film that you don't get when you make a film.
You mentioned working with a female partner. Does anyone else want to speak about working with other women specifically and whether that's significant?
In my film, 75% of the crew are women, but they are not only script, makeup, wardrobe. There's the music, there's the DOP, there's the producer, there's the distributor. I tried to get involved as much women as possible, because I am a woman. If I don't do it, who's going to do it? Because when I went to the producers with my idea, I said, hello, I am 50 years old. I look younger, I know. This is my first film. I want to do this film with about lesbian gypsies, with non-professional actors and all the producers. Are you crazy? Go away. Because there were 5 or 6 male with a very silly idea, but easy to do, or they have their backgrounds and their other movies, and I was there alone. It's very difficult to... I want someone give me, please, $10 million. I will do an amazing blockbuster. Trust in me. But nobody is going to do it. So I have to produce myself as you to raise the financial, and it's a nightmare. I want to direct, not to look for the money all the time. Mm-hmm. So yeah. That's a problem. But we were in Cannes with the film.
Congratulations.
You know?
Yeah.
So I went to all the producers and said,
Sita, tell us about some of the obstacles you faced trying to make this, because there must have been considerable culturally, and you know, in terms of getting permission to film and all that sort of thing.
You see, like a woman filmmaker from all around the world, you see the difficulties and voices rising, how difficult it is. So imagine being Syrian in exile, making an independent film, first time filmmaker, woman filmmaker. I'm trying to tell the story of the war of not action movie or not about destruction, it's about magic realism movie. So if you add other stuff, it was really difficult. But also I was proud I made it with my sister. We were both sisters living in Syria making this film in Tibet. And when we moved to Beirut, and we were like, it was a crazy endeavor. Like everyone was, as we are complaining at the documentary, all women filmmaker complain that men get the production and the grants, but women get the post-production grants. Because they only give you money when they see the movie that you are capable of doing it. And the development money is not really a guaranteed risk, it's just 10,000, 50,000. But the production grants is always for men. And so in fiction, this is really, really difficult to make. So we had, my sister was to have to ask every little bit fund you can find from human rights for non-traditional funding you can make. And like until we need this film at the end, even if it looks easier because the film is a current subject about Syria. But actually, we were saying, why not making a documentary? Why making a fiction? Why a war? Why are you talking a war about war and you are a woman? Why are you making a film about war and you are a woman? And he said, can I tell something else, being now Syrian and in exile and lost my country? You know. So all the difficulties that women have facing in the different parts of the world, it's, you have to add layers of exile and war and refugees.
Amazing job just getting it made, and it's a super film. Sarah, can you talk to me about, because we were talking about, you know, some of the preconceptions people have about genre and like why would you want to, you mentioned it briefly earlier, but can you talk a little bit more about that? Why people were wondering why you would want to make that kind of film and how you proved to them, well obviously the proof is in the pudding, but how you managed to actually make it?
I think there's so few genre films made by women. Mm-hmm. You know, just in terms of the reception of the film since it's been completed, you know, it gets invited to so many festivals because they want a woman. And they know women making genre films.
Yeah.
So it was a challenge, but it is, you know, there's one big shootout scene in the movie. And when you read the script, it's this big shootout in a train depot. And it's like people are jumping out from trains and everyone's shooting. And when you watch the scene ultimately becomes about the trauma for the main character seeing someone dead. And it made me so acutely aware of, I suppose it's terrible to generalize because actually there is no generalizing and it's not women do this and men do this. But like when I had to look at myself, there is a tendency in myself, absolutely, to, I don't care about the squibs. You know, I don't care about, like, the crates that need to be shot and little bits of crate needs to fall off and car chases. When I watch those movies, I sort of fast-forward it through the car chase. So instinctively, it's so foreign to me to do a genre movie. But actually, you know, You can do that big shootout scene and make the scene be about something human at the same time. And I think that as more women start making genre films, the genres will change. naturally, and they will become more accessible to more women audiences.
Yeah.
And I think that particularly coming from a country like South Africa, where there's so much violence against women, you need women to be making films about violence, because you need a female gaze on the violence that changes the way that violence is understood. So that the violence isn't understood from a male perspective, but it's actually really understood in terms of the impact that it's having on women. Like you always land up making films about things I care about.
That's pretty well said, thank you, Sarah. Jessica, let's talk a bit about the theme of your film, because obviously making a movie about boxing isn't what people sort of naturally expect of women, and how fantastic to have this perspective on it. Did you find any obstacles when you were trying to kind of sell this idea, or were you able to go off and do it?
Can I just pick up on something about this idea of genre films? Because actually I was really inspired by Rocky.
Great.
Yeah. And I wanted to make a Rocky film. Yes. I wanted to make a film, you know, a microfilm where I left the cinema going, yeah, come on. And obviously I feel a bit like that when I watch those genre films, but I wanted to make it even more like that to reach out to an audience and you know, and give that feeling, you know, that sense, which is, you know, so I think it's really interesting what you say. In terms of getting the film made, I felt like it took a long time, it took a lifetime, and it took no time, because it's the first film I've ever made, so it's the first, I've never directed before, and I feel like it's as a director, I was sort of, I'd pretty much given up on the thought that I would direct, you know, and it was just, it felt like suddenly, somehow, kind of just got into a slipstream, because I hadn't given up on the thought that it would happen, and I had a kind of files of ideas and films just that I'd tried and failed and tried and failed and tried and tried and failed to make. And then suddenly, somehow, I kind of found myself talking to, you know, a female film financier and saying, would you be interested in me directing a micro-budget feature? I've got an idea. And she went, yeah, I would. I was like, okay, great, well, I'll just send you the treatment. And then that was a very quick, yes, you can do it. And then it was a very quick, suddenly, like, okay, so do it? And you're going to give me the money to make this micro-budget feature? And she said, yes. And I said, great, okay. So basically, anything at that point, any obstacle, any hurdle, any ridiculous low budget, any time constraints, I was just absolutely ready to overcome, because I felt like, even though it was effectively, she said that in March, and we were started principal photography, I basically set up all the locations in Folkestone, I kind of got all these favours, I created and I organised everything, I got a secondary school involved and went and did workshops, I went and talked to an old people's home so we could film there, and set everything up so that when we started filming in July and people turned up, you know, I was kind of ready for it. But that was like, you know, a matter of months as I was sort of developing the script and kind of getting ready for it. But in some senses, it was really a lifetime, or at least from my early 20s when I really did want to start directing, and just it just never really happened for me. So other things happened, but, you know, that didn't. So it was quick, you know. And it was amazing because we started principal photography in July 2017, and then I did a screening of the film for all the local people who participated in the film, who I was so grateful for, because I couldn't have done it without them. Because, you know, when you go into somebody's factory and you say, you know, I make a film, and I've only got this amount of money, but I would really love to, you know, film in your space, and they go, yeah, sure, you know, yeah. You just are overwhelmed with gratitude, and for all the people who collaborated and helped in that way to make the film possible, they were the first people who saw it, and we did a screening in Folkestone in July 2018, and then just pretty much a year from principal photography to completion, and that was phenomenal. You know, it was a great feeling.
I've seen a lot of nods here, because it strikes me a lot of your films actually tackle the issue of community. And was community very much important in terms of getting it made? If anyone wants to speak to that,
yeah,
far away.
Well, I need a community that was very difficult to get into. Mm. But as you, the people, I mean, for example, I think that people have fear of the others because they don't know them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And at the moment that you know that the other person is willing how to pay the rent, loves their children as you love them, you feel that connection, and it's not a community, it's part of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's very important for us that we work with this, mm-hmm. with these feelings to be part of the community that we are
yeah.
going to film.
Yeah.
Also, yeah. my film, I wrote the film in Syria, but then I had to make it in Lebanon and to recreate Syria, to make it a film, doing location and searching all around Lebanon to recreate the country I lost. So in independent film, it's become really more difficult because you lose every favor, everyone believes in you, every sponsorship, every location you can naturally have an independent film to make your first feature film. Suddenly everything you have to pay, to search, and to recreate. So, so basically, in my community, I was... As a background of documentalist too, I believed in therapeutic aspect of art, I was also trying to mix between professional actors and non-professional actors. So basically, besides the four main actors, professional actors, all the actors are coming from refugee camps in Lebanon. I believe that not only it's a way of expressing, art can heal somehow. Maybe I can't change anything in my film, maybe I can change at least the experience of making this film together. I can't affect someone with making this film. So basically, I was becoming emotional about talking. So basically, the experience of working between non-professional actors and professional actors, and what the world is just here and making this film, it's also a way also, it kind of blurred the boundary between reality and unreality. The shot wouldn't finish with cut. The emotion was still here because they would remember someone they lost from their family or a friend. And also I believe because it's very difficult as a Syrian refugee to be in different countries as a refugee, because somehow we find a lot of house welcoming, but also found a lot of resistance about of fear of who is the other and who is the coming a kind of enemy. So it's not difficult, it's not easy to make the film. So also it was also kind of making job opportunity for my community to make this film in difficult circumstances.
Well done, that's amazing. Let's cut to the audience to see if anyone has any questions. We've got time for a couple. Yeah, here we go.
So thinking about like the barriers that you kind of come against, like what is like probably like the main kind of thing that's holding you back, like if there was more female directors, would that be something that would help? If there was a framework for you, would that help? Or is it perception? You know, so like what are the kind of things that are barriers and things that could help you?
Can I take that?
Please take that.
So I think that we all need allies. I think that as a gay woman, I need straight allies. I think as a white woman, I tried to be an ally for the community that I filmed with and was able to get access that they couldn't get, to talk to the cops, to do things that they, as a black filmmaker, I wouldn't have had the privilege. And I think that as women, we need male allies that believe in us and that don't hear our voices and immediately assume that we know less, or you hear our we're more timid or less confident and see that as being less talented because they're not the same. And you know, there's been so many times that I've gone into a room to pitch an idea and the only people in that room are men. And I can hear my own voice sounding less
confident
or just coming across as if my ideas count somehow less than theirs. And I have a producer who worked on the film with us who is a British man, a straight man, and his role was to take any ideas that I had and say them again to men so that they
could say, oh my God.
So oh, I see.
And sadly, it worked. And there was many moments that I would say something on the phone and then he would just repeat what I said later and they would agree. And so, you know,
mansplained.
Well, I wasn't being mansplained. He was almost translating.
Or did he just watch?
So, I mean, I guess I would just say, I don't know how to change that perception in men. You know, I saw it sadly in my own country when Hillary Clinton was debating against Trump, that even if she was clearly more educated and articulate than him, which is easy to do, but he still won almost every debate simply because he dominated with his voice and his, you know,
I think
his
being. We can't just to digress, but it's such an interesting topic. But I think we are in a weird and kind of dangerous time, because of that. This sense that ultimately, you know, if you live in a society that is unequal in your favour, then equality feels like oppression.
Mm.
And actually that's what Trump is exploiting currently. But I like to think that actually, that we're still transitioning and, you know, change is happening. Mm.
But I mean, if I can just add on to what you've just said, I think that we have to be our own allies too.
Yes.
And that's, you know, it's like we need to turn around and support other women. I mean, it's exactly what you said. It's like suddenly you're talking to a female producer. Well, there's a conversation.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, we need to put women in positions of power. And when we are in those positions of power ourselves, we need to support other women. And, you know, when I've been in this industry for sure, a very long time. And when I see the way that men operate in this industry, men always take an apprentice with them into the industry. And we don't do that. You know, we don't take young female apprentices with us into the industry and train them and bring them and give them the same access. And I think we need to look at what we're doing and we need to change that.
We need reference.
We need reference, and we have to be those references.
Mm.
You know, we have to be the ones where people look up and say, oh God, yeah, of course they're women directors.
Why do you think that women have not brought apprentices in? Do you think it's just that in the past, that insecurity, because there's so few opportunities, is it kind of like, I'm just going to keep this for myself?
Exactly,
yeah.
And it's because you're fighting so hard to be at the table. You forget
that
the way you're going to protect your place at the table is getting more women there.
But it's their society is the same, not only cinema, I mean.
Yeah.
Mm. And the big companies, only the 2% are women in their manager teams. I mean, in cinema it's the same as in the society. We have to change a lot of things, not only cinema.
Let's go to the streets.
We have to be activists, even women and men. We have to change things.
I had a phenomenal DOP who I had one day to film all of my boxing scenes. So I had one day in the ring because that's all we had budget for. So I thought, I can't watch playback, so I'm going to be in front of the camera learning the fight sequences, working with the fight directors and recreating all these different fight scenes. And I need someone who's going to be looking through the lens and checking that I've got shots so that when I come to the edit, I can put the fight scene together. My brother's an editor. I invited him to come. So he came and he's directed. So he was sort of like, you know, all the people. And Ryan, my DOP, who is my absolute total complete ally and is a complete G, sort of eyeing him up, and the crew were sort of thinking he's throwing his weight around a bit. Ryan quite quickly got his back up and said, right, you outside now. and said to him, I don't like alpha males. He said, I don't like alpha males and I don't work with alpha males. There's one voice I want to hear and it's Jessica's. And I was like, I was enjoying it, maybe a little bit too much, because I knew my brother wouldn't kind of. But basically, everyone calmed down and it was fine. But, you know, when you have a man like Ryan Edelston on your side, and, you know, who it turned out for all of his own reasons was a phenomenal supporter of female energy, female creativity, it's phenomenal.
That was an ally.
There you go. Yeah, allies comes in all shapes and sizes. So, yeah. Time for maybe one more question at the back there, sir?
Yeah. I'm just curious because this is a question that it throws me up. It's generally about the. It's just generally about the nurturing new female voices in the community, because obviously, you know, one of the things, because having said 38% of the actors are, 38% of the directors are female, I mean, how challenging is it to get new writers into the mix? I mean, are there particular writers that each of you are admirers of who are sort of from film school and stuff?
So screenwriters you're talking about.
Yeah, just generally new female voices.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I think
one or two of you want to speak to that.
I always had a great script production company sent me. You know, like, for example, this is a perfect example, female script, genre piece.
Yeah.
You know, she's interested in female directors, and she wants a female to direct her film. So she's now able to call the shots because she's written a great script to her production company who want to make the film, and she wants a female director on board. So, like, it works both ways, you know?
Mm.
And it's great that she's done that. So I might get a chance to do that, I might not. But, you know, I feel like that's a good way to work, right? You know, you, you know, if you want a female writer, you know, but I don't know if you make decisions based on gender, really, because art is art. You know, it's a good thing to remind people as well, as we're not filmmakers because we're women and we want to, you know, we're filmmakers and artists because we're filmmakers and artists. You know, and the changes is that we're being able to be what we are. You know, and that's important to stress that, you know.
I think the lady with the hand up was speaking. Is that right?
Thank you, because you spoke to the point I wanted to make. I'm Stephanie Morrison from San Pedro, California, the port of Los Angeles. I'm a journalist, but I'm also a director of this film festival I founded 16 years ago. I'm interested in your U.S. gate. I want to talk to you towards the end of the meeting. But it's, first of all, commendation. I haven't seen your movies yet. I'm sorry to say it's a lot to navigate, but I know what it takes to make a movie. I've been on sets. I've been associated. So commendation to you, and how you are empowering yourselves and each other, and that gets to the point. Isn't it, it's a paradox. Isn't it that you want the best talent to support what you're doing? So does it matter if it's a boy or a girl or a female? I mean, can you put the names in the hat and go for the strict talent and then again still try to empower the feminine side because it does bring a perspective? So speak to that, and also that I believe we have to stop listening to what I do believe is media pollution and make decisions for ourselves based on the caliber of people and their character and what they're doing, and not be swept up in what is becoming an epidemic in the U.S. with a lot of this stuff. So I had to just add that little moment, because you're all doing great and you are bringing more women in. And if 38% of this film festivals are women directors, which is extraordinary, how many on your cruise, what was the percentage of feminine workers, female workers?
35%.
Well, we had editors.
I don't know. I mean, I would say probably about 60%.
Yeah. I couldn't tell you off the top of my head because I wouldn't really know how to work it out. I mean, does that include cast?
No.
And extras?
No.
No, it doesn't include cast.
You know,
say nothing like that percentage. I wouldn't even.
They did a survey where they took 100 men and they said, if you were sick, would you want to be cared for by a man or a woman? All 100 of them said a woman. And then they took a survey of 100 women and they asked the same question and they also all said women. And so I think that, I say that to just say that I think there are some things that men do better. And of course, this is a generalization, but that, like you were saying, that naturally they're drawn toward, and there are some things that women do better. And when we're able to acknowledge that and say, you know, I could get into a room with a camera and make anyone feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a privilege I had as a woman, because I could listen to them and talk to them and feel unintimidating. Mm-hmm. And so I could pull an authentic story from them in a way, because I was a woman, and I think working with actors is very similar. So I think simply by starting to acknowledge that, like you have all been saying, that take the best talent in what you do. Yeah. And if I find a man who's going to translate for me or fight in a room to get money, then why would I try and have a shyer woman do that role that could be perhaps better done? So I really think it's about simply acknowledging that we all have talents and that they're all different, and bringing them all to
it's about equality, as we said.
Yeah, I mean, I think we have to check our prejudices, though.
Yes, unconscious bias. Yeah,
because you know so Mayfair was shot by a male DOP, but I've subsequently done a short film, and you know I thought I'm going to shoot with a female DOP, and I really had to check my own prejudice. Like I had to say I'm consciously going to shoot with a female DOP, and it was a completely different experience.
Mm.
The
set in a good way?
No, in an amazing way.
Right.
I mean, it was an amazing experience. It the set felt different. The power dynamics felt different. It was so stark. But it was a question of, you know, we do think, oh, male DOPs. And we do somehow give more to male DOPs. Whereas female DOPs really have to prove themselves.
Yeah.
You know, they have to show that they can be as good as men.
Yeah.
And we don't give them the chance that we would give a male DOP. And so we do have to check that.
My DOPs are female.
Yeah.
That is very funny. Because
yes.
all the men in the industry said, you're a woman, the camera is very heavy.
Yeah.
And I was like, I have a 7 years old boy, and when I take it, everybody said, take care because it's very heavy.
Yeah.
Some silly things.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
so it's stupid things.
Unfortunately, I could talk about this all day, but
no.
Unfortunately, we have to wrap up. Thank you all so much for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thanks to the London Film Festival for granting us permission to share this audio from their female filmmakers panel, and to you for listening and staying subscribed to the podcast. If you like what you heard, please take the time to leave us a review on your podcast app of choice or share the show with a friend. We'll be back with the first of our podcast interviews from the 62nd London Film Festival, but until then, you can read all our daily interviews on directorsnotes.com. Speak to you soon.